Hey, Fairbanks, welcome to Problem Corner on KFAR. This is Craig Compo filling in for David Prues, who's, I don't know where he's at. David is missing in action. I'm not sure where he's at. I always have to clean up around his desk here. He's got all these, he's got like how to pick women up. He's got all these pamphlets out here. Dave, I'm just joking. But anyway, Dave is out today, so I'm filling in for him for Problem Corner. Thanks for tuning in. Member of the Laundry House Gang, and I have another member of the Laundry House Gang here today with me. One of my favorite Laundry House Gang members, Jennifer Juhas. Welcome, Jennifer.
Good morning. Thanks, Craig.
Yeah. So I've known Jennifer a long time. She's been a member for a long time at the Laundry House Gang, and I wanted you to just spend a few minutes and give us a little history. How you got here? What are you into? I know you're big in the outdoors. I've known that forever. That's what we love about you as a member of the Laundry House Gang. How did you get here? Tell us your story.
Oh, gosh. Well, I first came to Fairbanks to go to college in 1987 and thought I was going to get a biology degree. Ended up going back down to Anchorage and getting a different degree. But I came up in 2022 to help with a house race. Bud Fate had been part of the Laundry House Gang also, and so that was a successful race. I fell in love with Fairbanks. The people were just so nice, and everyone inviting you over to their house for Thanksgiving because you were displaced and it was winter, and I wanted to stay, but I wasn't able to find a job in Fairbanks that year, so I had to go back down to the legislature for a little while, and then took a job in 2002.
Yeah,
02. And then I ran the Alaska Outdoor Council from 2003 to 2005, which the headquarters was located here in Fairbanks,
right.
And we were having weekly meetings. But the folks that have been going to that meeting for the Friends of Bill Hager, you guys had already been meeting for like 30 years before I showed up.
Yeah, it goes back to the 70s. I remember we used to meet at the El Sombrero restaurant before they had a fire there, and that was always the place with the old gang. Tinker, of course, was there, and Heimer, and a bunch of other guys. Some of them kind of faded off or expired, but a good old group, and I was one of the youngest guys there. I was something that we don't have enough of now in the Laundry House Gang or anybody else. You look around that room, and you're one of the few people without gray hair. My hair is turning gray pretty fast, but yeah, it's amazing.
We've had a few of the younger folks come, and we need to get folks back like Josh Church and some of those guys.
Yeah, it's really important because a lot of these things, that we're fighting all the time with the Laundry House Gang is we're going to be long gone when and not see the results of maybe what we did or what we didn't do, but we need that young group to kind of get in there and get involved. And so anyway, anybody that's listening there, if you're elderly like we are, or I am anyway, and if you've got children or grandchildren that want to get engaged, that love hunting and fishing and really actually care about being able to do it 20 years from now, and not just taking pictures or following a path, you need to. That's just my little plug for the Laundry House Gang. We need to get more people involved. We meet at TVSA every Wednesday. The door isn't locked. You bring your own lunch, and it's just a good group. But as people, we want people that are engaged and that want to get engaged. Anyway.
Well, we trade information. Some of us are immersed in fisheries issues, others in trails and access, others in active hunting. And those of us that want to get outdoors, we want to get outdoors and do those things. But we spend so much of our time in these regulatory meetings. And that's what I found out when I first started getting involved in the hunting access issues around 1992 when they first formed the Federal Subsistence Board. And I was hearing this stuff on the radio. I went to the first meeting of the Federal Subsistence Board down in Anchorage at the Egan Center, and there were only about three of us that were public members. It was all staff. And I thought, man, this has been all over the news, and if people actually care about our access, this is all who's here. I still have the binder in my Connex box. One of the RAC members from Southeast thought she had caught me in a fib and said, they didn't form that board until 93. And I said, I know. And in 92, they were having meetings about how to form the board at the Egan Center. She was like, that's right. So anyway, came to Fairbanks, worked for Alaska Outdoor Council, led us through a defeat of the bear baiting initiative that tried to outlaw that pastime, and then went to work for the borough mayor and was the chair of the ballot initiative defeat to keep aerial predator management legal and predator management in general as a tool for the department. And then you know how it is. You try to go do your own thing, and there's just more meetings to go to and more boards to sit on. So I'm currently the chair of the Outdoor Heritage Foundation of Alaska. It's a 501c3 educational group. We support the department's mission for conservation and education and fall under the umbrella of the Congressional Sportsmen's Foundation. So we manage the Legislative Outdoor Heritage Caucus. And then you were asking me where I serve. So then I'm also vice chair of the Sportsman's PAC, vice chair of Sportsman's Conservation Alliance, and a first vice president for Alaska Outdoor Council when I used to be their executive director.
First of all, thank you for all that, because that's a lot of work. I mean, you're probably the busiest of the bunch of the Laundry House gang as far as actively involved with these groups. And I know it means a lot to you and to everybody that's involved with it, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of commitment. And it's good to see that. I mean, I really appreciate your efforts there.
I think Tinker and Heimer and Karen and Pete and Al, yeah, you know, they're probably listening and they're just as busy. And that's one thing we talked about before we went on the air, is that people don't always see how much effort you're putting in and
right,
what you're giving up to go to these meetings.
Well, and it's because we care about protecting the resource, the way of life, and all that stuff. It all boils down to that. You know, we want the people that friends and family and people that are doing this later to be able to enjoy some of what we enjoy. You know, I remember, and I've talked about this before, I remember when I was real young, I think I was probably 12 or 13, and I saw a picture, and I was with my dad, and it was a picture, like an aerial shot of a bunch of deer hunters up in stands or whatever in Wisconsin or somewhere in the States. And I noticed they're all wearing orange. And it never occurred to me why. I'm a young kid. I'm going, Dad, why did they all wear the same color? And it's because I was so spoiled being hunting in Alaska, being up here where you don't even, we're out in the boat. We're up walking through the woods. We're 40 miles from another human being sometimes, you know. And it's just like he explained exactly why. There's too many people and you got to be careful not to shoot somebody. And I'm thinking to myself, is that even hunting? And so... anyway, it's that always has stuck with me, because it reminds me when you were born here and you don't know any different. I've never hunted outside of Alaska. You know that? It's really bizarre. I've never hunted outside of Alaska. I've traveled outside of Alaska, but I just somehow feel like I'm going to be disappointed, because we do really well up here. I need to do it, I know.
But let's go back to what you were thinking as a child, because you've been a longtime Alaskan. And you've watched our state grow. You've watched our population grow.
Sure.
And hunting has changed. Some of that has been more pressure in certain areas as federal areas get closed off. People are congregating more closely in one area. In your favorite hunting spots, have you seen in the last 50 years more people coming than used to be?
Not where I go.
Okay.
I mean, maybe a very few increase, and it depends on the water level, because we usually hunt by boat. But I've been lucky. I know a lot of other areas. I've never road hunted or none of that. I know there's a lot more people in those areas. But anyway, we're talking with Jennifer Juhas, 458-8255. If you want to call in, we're going to take a short break, and we'll get back and talk about the Park Service and other nasty folks. Okay.
Invites you to a fun evening of food, beer, and friendship. The fantastic selection of Silver Gulch beers are on tap. The menu speaks for itself, with some old favorites and some delicious new selections too. It's a short drive to historic downtown Fox and the warmth and charm of the Silver Gulch Brewery. And remember, the bar opens at 3:30 Fridays through Sundays. Make your plans soon for the Silver Gulch.
The Fairbanks Clinic has been here for you since 1932, the year Amelia Earhart completed the first female nonstop solo flight across the Atlantic, the year BBC aired their first television broadcast. That was over 90 years ago, and they're still here, still taking care of you and your family. That's the Fairbanks Clinic in their beautiful building at the corner of Cushman and Gaffney. Call and schedule your appointment today with their family care practice. That's the Fairbanks Clinic, here for you since 1932.
Weather brought to you by GCR. Maintaining your correct tire pressure improves safety, fuel economy, and tire life. Drop by the Tire Guys for free tire inflation. GCR Tires and Service, taming the Alaskan road. Van Horn at Cushman.
KFAR weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Today, with highs around 38. Winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Lows around 18. Tonight, cloudy. Overcast skies. Tomorrow, chance of snow. High of 40. Upper 30s. Wednesday, upper 20s by Thursday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM.
And streaming live at kfarradio.com.
All right, Fairbanks, welcome back. We are doing Dave Pruse's Problem Corner show, filling in. I'm a little rusty on the format of the panel here, so if we go to dead air or something, just bear with us here. I'm speaking with Jennifer Juhas, one of the longtime Laundry House Gang members. We've been talking a little bit about your history, and tell us a little about your hunting. I mean, I know you love to get out and hunt and do some stuff outside before we get into the boring Park Service. Not boring, frustrating, I guess, Park Service. But I mean, I know you do a lot of hunting and trapping and stuff. What do you do? What do you like to do the most?
My favorite is sheep hunting, but you've seen what's been going on in the Brooks Range with the population, and we haven't gone out to do that very much the last couple of years.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I figure it's just the same as other people who hunt and fish up here. But you're talking about Tanana Valley Sportsmen's Association. So mm-hmm. The Laundry House Gang meets on Wednesdays at noon at TVSA, where they have the rifle range. And Larry Hannison over there has been doing some great things with the rifle team from 4-H and some of the other college-age folks. Tomorrow night at 7 p.m., they're going to have a special presentation. Folks should come on by and see that. So Chuck Gray is going to be showing a movie on the first Delta bison hunt from the 1950s. He's a longtime outdoorsman, guide, and publisher emeritus, however I'm supposed to pronounce that, with the Fairbanks Daily News Miner. But that should be a real good presentation.
What time is that?
That's at 7 o'clock at Tanana Valley Sportsmen's Association. Folks may have seen that across the way from Fred Meyer's over by the airport. Fred Meyer's, right. You can see the shadow of the rifle shooter painted on the side of the building. It's next to a little hotel over there and
right
close to a boat shop.
Right before you get to Compose, your outdoor leaders in Fairbanks, your outdoor headquarters.
There's plenty of room in there. It's comfortable.
And I'd encourage people. Chuck is a really, really interesting guy. Tons of history, you're right. It would be good to get down there and I'm going to try and get there. I'd love to watch that video. If you've ever watched This Is My Alaska, it's that era, you know, some of that stuff is just so amazing to me to watch.
And folks might have questions. There is, reintroducing the wood bison in Alaska. There were some publicized issues with the Delta bison herd and their ability to find food last winter and what that meant and why didn't the department feed them and how were they managed and how do you hunt them. There will be people on hand to answer those questions. Good. And so it'll be an opportunity to meet new folks, and if you haven't been involved in the outdoor arena and you want to ask some questions of some of the older folks that are there, that's where I got my information, was from the people who'd been doing this for 30, 40, 50 years before I came on the scene in my 20s. And we really welcome anybody who wants to learn more. Come watch the video. If you're comfortable asking questions, do that. And there'll be people on hand that you can meet that'll connect you to other opportunities.
Yeah, it's going to be a good event. I think it'll be well attended too. I wanted to talk a little bit about what we've been working on pretty hard, our group, and specifically you and I and a couple others, and that is this National Park Service rule that it seems like you can't, even after Sturgeon, the big Sturgeon victory in court, the two unanimous Supreme Court decisions, where you would hope that these federal agencies would get it, that they would understand that Alaska is different, that this is, you know, our game to manage, in our waters, and they just keep rewriting the rules. They keep coming back. They come up with other excuses to go back to.
Particular rule that they published, and thank you to Representative Mike Cronk for sponsoring House Joint Resolution 10, where our legislature is telling Congress to please tell the Park Service to roll this rule back. The bigger issue for me is not so much simply the sturgeon case showing that the state has the right to manage certain things, but specifically this proposal was brought by an Alaska Native man who was a friend of mine and isn't with us anymore, Andrew Furman. He passed away a couple of years ago. He's from Fort Yukon. He brought this proposal to allow certain practices for hunting of bears that were traditional and that I don't practice. I'm not an Alaska Native. I'm not Athabascan. But people that he knew did, to bring certain bear hunting practices through the Federal Subsistence Board. And strangely enough, they actually did something good and passed that. There had been many proposals that had come through the Regional Advisory Committee process, come through the Board of Game and State Advisory Committee process that the Federal Subsistence Board had rejected. So this originated from a rural user, Alaska Native, went through the process, was blessed by the Federal Subsistence Board, and they already tried, two agencies already tried to dispermit this or prohibit it, even after it was deemed legitimate through lots of public comment. Fish and Wildlife Service and National Park Service. Yeah. And so there had been three different resolutions from Alaska Federation of Natives. There had been multiple pleas to make that stop, and previous administrations and Congress had told them to roll that back. So it seems like we've already settled this. That's what we talk about when there's only so much time for the person who wants to get outside, enjoy the outdoors, maybe get some mental health out of doing that, know where your food's been, eating local food. How much time can we spend in these public meetings? We already settled it through the board process, and then we already settled it again through Congress, and here we have individual managers trying to say, oh, well, I'm going to say that's not compatible with my park or not compatible with my refuge.
And then they use safe. They always try and fall back on say, oh, it's a safety issue, bear baiting, it's a safety issue. How many people have you heard, hunters, that are mauled by a bear or their neighbors, you know, or somebody down the road is mauled by a bear because of bear baiting?
Well, there's provisions in place, and there's already, you can't host the site except for certain times of year after certain things have been proven to be in place.
You haul everything away. Mm-hmm. You can't just leave it. Yeah, and that's what's frustrating. Not only the reasons they come up with, these meetings, you talked about the meetings, oftentimes they're on a 4 o'clock on a Friday, or they set up the meetings at a point where if there's any public involvement, not that they really listen to Alaskans, they take the millions of emails they get from friends of animals and everything else, and they put those front and center. And so, and Alaskans are busy, and so...
I love when they try to put a hunting issue for that species during the hunting season for that species.
Yeah.
Or, you know, let's discuss the state of the salmon in the middle of salmon season.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah, and it's just a strategy they use, and it works. I mean, I bet they take classes on this. There's probably classes on how to set up a meeting when the opposition isn't going to be able to show.
Okay, here's something about classes. So I was just down at what they call the North American meeting, is the AFWA. It's the after-school club for all the biologists for the state and federal and tribal biologists. And I was in a meeting on March 22nd for federal and tribal relations, where Cynthia Martinez, the head of the Wildlife Refuge System, said in front of the group that last year the Fish and Wildlife Service had made a priority to align with state regulations. Now, it's the Park Service that is currently trying to disallow the bear hunting practices. But we haven't seen that in Alaska. The folks from Arizona said that's happening, that Fish and Wildlife Service is making efforts to align with their regulations. But we see more divergence in Alaska, even out in the Kuskokwim on the fishing. Really, I've witnessed firsthand, being a department employee, not only a lack of cooperation, but actions to try not to cooperate with the state on these regulations.
Yeah, intentionally.
So I started looking up online, you know, where I could find this priority. And I was looking on Saturday before this, and several of the sites were down. One of the training videos is up for how we should align with state regulations if you work for the Fish and Wildlife Service, but about six of their links were down.
What a coincidence. Hey, we're going to take a phone call. We got Jennifer Uhas, a member of the Laundry House Gang. We're going to take a phone call and see what you got to say out there. Yeah, this is Problem Corner. You're on the air. Your name is?
Hello.
Yeah, who's this?
Hi, this is Mark in care of the Alaska Freedom Council. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was interested in your calls. You had a litany of organizations there with the conservation and whatnot and such with pertaining to Alaska's historic resources. What about the perfection of title? The Alaska State Statute Mines and Mining, Section 28A, 190%. Alaska's been swindled, or Alaska U.S., Providential Land Board-based provisions have been swindled. And you're wanting to maintain your liberties, but there's not a program to support and buttress your foundations. And so this is where a lot of the contention comes. I too, am a grateful native-born Alaskan-American. I've lived under every governor of Native Alaska and have observed a little bit here and there. But the borough, where our constitution was written, previous to the borough's formation in 55 and 56 up at the UAF, there's a lot of history, a lot of links that, you know, there's snippers, there's unseen evildoers trying to sever us from our own heritage and history here in Alaska. And, you know, the hunting and the conservation is a part of that. That's a part of their booty, their loot, for ripping you off. It's indigenous Alaskans, second providential land-based provision claim, post-1741. ANCSA of 1971 was of retroactive pre-1741 origin. And so I don't see the conservative voice throughout Alaska, which concerns me. And please remember the first eight words of Alaska's Constitution, one and all, we the people of Alaska, grateful unto God. By the way, you know, the borough absconded with $250,000 to put up a big marquee sign on our historic Alaska U.S. 1867 centennial site. Where do those big timbers go? They ripped the marquee back down. There are people trying to obscure and eclipse our heritage. So I just also encourage young people to get involved. Thank you very much, and God bless you. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks, Mark. I was hoping you'd stay on a little bit. There's, you know, several different issues there that are connected, and he kind of showed the bridges there. But each one of them could probably be their own show as far as the perfection. There's so many different directions we could go there. With the lands, that's one thing we've been talking about lately, is if you look at a map of Alaska, you know, thank God we're Americans. I wouldn't want to be a Russian. Yeah. But we didn't vote on being transferred. We did vote on being a state, and part of that was the federal management. It was the big driver behind wanting to be a state. And even with the conveyances, look at how much federal land is still, 60% of our state is federal land. Yeah. It's not native owned. It's not state of Alaska right. owned. Yeah. It seems like we didn't get our share yet.
Yeah, thank you, Jimmy Carter and followers. All right, we'll be right back. We're going to listen to some bumper music. We'll be back the back half of the hour with our guest, Jennifer Uhas. Thanks for joining us.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fox News, I'm Rich Dennison. Former President Trump is heading to New York, where he'll face arraignment on criminal charges.
Although the New York indictment remains under seal, it's believed to center on alleged hush money payments made during the 2016 presidential election campaign. And after his arraignment on Tuesday, former President Trump plans to head directly back to Mar-a-Lago and deliver public comments from there Tuesday evening.
Fox's Jonathan Sary. Trump denies any wrongdoing, calling the charges political persecution. The Biden administration says it is working on getting Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich freed following his arrest last week in Russia on espionage charges.
We are keenly and strongly and closely tracking this issue and working as diligently as we can to secure his release.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute. A judge dismissed a sex abuse case against former acting Alaska Attorney General Clyde Ed Sniffen, citing the statute of limitations in place when the alleged abuse happened over 30 years ago. The case thrown out on Friday involved allegations that Sniffen, 58, sexually abused a then 17-year-old student in 1991 when he was 27 and the alleged victim's coach of her high school's mock trial competition team in Anchorage. Sniffen had pled not guilty. Alaska does not currently have a statute of limitations in place for sexual abuse of minors. However, in an order on Friday, Superior Court Judge Peter Ramgren said that in 1991, there was a five-year limit on bringing charges of sexually abusing minors, the Anchorage Daily News reported. He said that changes made to the statute of limitations by state lawmakers for certain crimes in 1992 and 2001 did not apply to Sniffen's case, siding with the defendant's lawyer. The alleged victim, Nikki Doherty White, called the ruling a huge disappointment, but said she did not regret going public with her story after learning that Sniffen had been appointed to the position.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
With stores in Anchorage, Wasilla, North Pole, Fairbanks, and throughout North America, Glass Doctor is your locally owned and operated solution when you need a windshield. With our G12 Road Hazard Guarantee, you get 1 year peace of mind, knowing we will fix or replace your windshield if it gets damaged or broken for free in Alaska, where they put rocks on the road like on purpose. It's practically a buy one, get one free kind of a deal, and only at Glass Doctor.
Call the Glass Doctor, we'll fix your paint. Oh, yeah.
I'm a goose watcher. I'm a goose watcher. Watching those geese drop by. My, my, my. I'm a goose watcher. I'm a goose watcher.
Springtime is goose watch time, and that means the return of the geese to Kramer's Field is just around the corner. Win $500 in cash, courtesy of Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware, just for guessing when the first flock of Canada geese arrives. Enter Goose Watch 2023 at Frontier Outfitters in the Govora Mall or Century Hardware in the North Pole Plaza Mall. If your guess is the closest to the official time and day, you win $500. Visit KFARradio.com for details and official rules. Must be 18 or older. Be a goose watcher and win $500 cash.
I'm a goose watcher. I'm a goose watcher. Here comes one now.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM,
and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
So we just had a commercial for a goose watching. I hope everybody's putting their times in there because they can get a chance to win something. But I got to tell you, I love Kramer's Field. And, you know, it's a refuge that also allows hunting there. There's the falconer folks that go over there. It's really just a great place for us that's local that we can get to pretty quickly. In the springtime here, once the snow's gone, I'm a big fan of holding a meeting over there. Somebody says, can we get together for coffee? Can we get together for lunch? And I say, well, do you want to take a 40-minute walking meeting? You want to go use those trails over there? Get some sunshine therapy, get some outdoor therapy. But, geese are coming back. Soon they're going to plow those windrows. I don't know if people know, but the DOT employees that are members of Public Employees Local 71, they plow those windrows over there in order to attract the birds from the...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we're a world-famous Kramer's Field Migratory Bird Refuge. We're on the flyway.
You can hunt.
But to keep them away from the airplanes... That's part of the reason they plow those windrows to get them all diverted over to Kramer's. So it's a safety issue as well as, a lot of the folks that are into the photography go over and do that. So,
and, you know, there hasn't been, I can't remember the last time there was an incident, an airplane incident involving birds. I mean, there was the big one down in Anchorage.
Yeah, I remember that
ago.
One.
Corey Rossi was involved with, he was working for Department of Ag at the time, and I know he was real involved with that. But yeah, that's something you don't ever think, you know, it could happen a lot more, but for efforts like that, it probably restricts the amount of bad stuff that can happen. We were talking before the break on the National Park Service issue, and we've had our congressional delegation who has come out against this Park Service ruling. I think it's odd that the head of the National Park Service, Deb Holland, out of New Mexico, the number two oil-producing state in the union right now in the country is always spearheading these kinds of things, or backing the Park Service on this as the Department of Interior, as the head of the Department of Interior, and it's just, it's bothersome. I mean, you know, they just did the big willow restriction. I mean, they throw a little bone our way, but they were going to close 40% of what you were looking at, all the offshore areas. She goes after the road in King Cove.
I don't know how many people have ever been out there, but I've been out there to see where the road would go.
And this is the road that they're trying to build for safety. I think it's 20-some miles. Is it 20 miles?
It's around that. If you've ever tried to land in Sandpoint and then tried to land in Cold Bay, you'd understand that it's just across the lagoon. And no, you can't take the – they have a hovercraft out there. But when the weather is that bad, you really can't get there by plane or boat. It's just – You have to see it to believe it.
And one of the arguments from the Park Service and the feds is that this there's a Russian duck that flies over that area, and they don't want him to have to fly over and see a road. I remember part of the argument was that ridiculous that they don't want to put this gravel road down.
And the terrain is already nearly that. Yeah. It wouldn't take that much.
No, they could knock that out. Vogler could do it in a weekend. Right. but when,
tell us again how we got the compo trail.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, I'll tell that story. But it's amazing that kind of mindset even exists, and that the people are dying. People die because they can't get health care. They can't get over. Somebody's got a serious medical issue, and the weather's down. They can't get to where they need to get help. And it's like... They take the human completely out of all these decisions. The welfare of the human being is not as important as a Russian duck who might say, "I don't remember seeing that road there." Like that duck cares. I mean, where does this end?
I'm not sure. Having been out there though, there's trails, there's dirt roads, there's already those items in the vicinity. I don't know that this particular small amount of space when you've been out there and seen how vast it is, I can't really speak to it making that much of a difference. When we know when planes can't land in Fairbanks, we can still drive to Fred Meyer's and the plane can't land.
Right.
There is a big difference between being able to fly a plane, use a boat across a very, very choppy inlet that poses risk, and being able to drive a vehicle across, even if it's not the best conditions, you can still get a vehicle over to where you can catch the airplane.
Yeah, and that just doesn't figure in at all into their decision making, it seems. And we got the road kind of approved, and then it's been rescinded by Holland, right? So, Deb Holland. Anyway, one thing that always comes to my mind is as it's frustrating as it is, all these federal overreach and all this. We actually have a governor right now that's on our side on this stuff. I've been following this for a long time, and we've had some governors that have been, you know, decent when it comes to trying to get, you know, more rights, more access, and everything for Alaskans.
We've had governors who cared but didn't understand.
Or didn't
we've
execute.
Had governors who didn't care.
Yeah, we've had the Knowles and others that just didn't seem to even understand the Alaskan lifestyle. I mean, just everything they did was well, and no brainer. When he's out of office, he becomes the Park Service. What was the name? It's a position from the Park Service that basically oversees a lot of their policy. But we have a governor right now, Mike Dunleavy, who really does have our back, I think, on a lot of this stuff. From his navigability bill to his statehood defense fund initiative and all this stuff. We're getting money to fight these cases. There are 50 cases right now that are very critical for states' rights.
One thing people don't understand with that, when we talk about people's ability to find food and why ANILCA was passed. ANILCA, there's a lot on the congressional record in the debate that speaks to wanting to be able to preserve culture, and that the restrictions that these federal agencies are putting are only able to be done within the confines of a conservation concern when there's not enough animals to go around.
Right.
And yet the Federal Subsistence Board has made restriction after restriction absent that requirement that there be a conservation concern. The state regulations are what's providing for culture right now.
Right.
If you have to move to town to go to school or take a job for a few years, the federal provision will not let you go back to your home village and help grandma put up fish,
right.
Won't let you go and hunt for your elders, won't let you go learn your culture. It's the state regulations that are providing for that, and that wasn't the intent. When folks say, ANILCA's good because it does these things, well, it had an intent that it's never been realized in its application. And it isn't being realized right now. And just like the Sturgeon case, we're going to probably have to assert those. And how much can the private individual bear without the fundraising that happened to assist John Sturgeon?
Yeah.
He never would have been able to make it all the way to the Supreme Court.
$1.6 million that cost. And, you know, he carried a lot of the heavy weight there.
And how many years?
11 years, I think it was. Well, I was up the river with him in 2011. So it's been over 11 years, 10, 11. It's crazy. And it goes back. I remember the the feds when it was a Porcheau. He came to Alaska and went to all the different racks. There were 12 or 13 racks. And they literally sat down and asked every one of them, give us your priorities. We're from the government. We're here to help. And of course, they go to the native community. They're trying to isolate the state, right? Is what from the rural folks.
The state and our tribal folks have more in common than either one does with the federal system.
Right, exactly.
But some federal managers, I know some real good federal managers out there, and some real good federal biologists and staff who really want to do the right thing. But there have been multiple instances where a nefarious, I guess, if you want to say, federal manager has said, "I see an opportunity to pit the state against the tribes."
Yes.
And we're so distracted looking at each other that we haven't said we're aligned on predator management. We're aligned on a lot of harvest opportunities. We're aligned on so many ways to do things that there's been places where a wedge of a federal manager has inserted themselves and changed the dialogue. We need to change it back.
That's right. Well, look at, I remember when he was up here too, there was 12 of the 13 of those racks, their number one priority was, would like a predator control program similar to what the state has. Well, okay, state of Alaska has a very effective predator control
program. Well, in 2011, the chair of the Federal Subsistence Board, Tim Tawarik from out west, he wanted to change that policy. Now, the Federal Subsistence Board isn't even contained in statute. It's a product of an EIS record of decision once ANILCA passed.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have an entire show on that the way it's modeled is the way it's operating is not the way that it was supposed to be modeled. But our public folks on the Federal Subsistence Board who were appointed from rural areas all agreed, and the chair wanted it, and the federal solicitor said, you can't change that policy without a new EIS. And I was in trouble for raising my hand. I know I can be a little annoying, like Hermione Granger from Harry Potter sometimes. but there I was raising my hand saying, wait, you did an EIS to create this program, but that policy wasn't enacted until 2006. You didn't do an EIS for that policy, so why would you need to do an EIS to take it back? You don't have to.
Yeah.
And they scared the board and the public members in the board into saying, well, you know, you just have to vote against this. And it was privy to some of those side conversations that were happening in the room.
Right.
There's some papers that the state produced that said that's not even legitimate. You could, you made the policy, you can change the policy just as easy.
Yeah, they don't like hearing, you know, I guess with our group and people like yourself that are involved, I mean, they cringe because they don't want to address the facts of some of the stuff that, you know, they're overstepping their bounds. They're not playing by, they're not going through procedure. But it's the way it's always been, and they just never seem to learn. All right, we're going to take our final break. We'll be back after a few minutes with Jennifer Uhas and talk more about this state overreach.
Our Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The Firebird flies to the aid of kind-hearted Prince Ivan to free the captive princesses from a fearsome sorcerer and mischievous minions. Experience the pageantry of North Star Ballet's spring gala presentation, The Firebird, set to the compelling music of Stravinsky, along with original ballets and dance choreographed by North Star Ballet faculty. See North Star Ballet's 35th Spring Gala, coming to UAF Salisbury Theater April 22nd and 23rd. Visit northstarballet.org for more information and to buy tickets. The best time to buy your Honda snowthrower from the Woodway is right now. Why? It's springtime. Two big reasons. Number one, they're in stock right now. Supply line issues delayed this shipment for almost a year. Number two, you'll save money when you buy now. Prices will definitely go up if you wait. Secure your Honda snowthrower for next winter now. Invest while they're available and save. Honda your way through next winter with help from the Woodway and your dependable Honda snowthrower.
Affordable Used Cars is the only true one-stop shopping experience in Fairbanks. Affordable Used Cars has the largest inventory of pre-owned vehicles in the state. All makes and all models. That's right. Affordable has them all. Chevy, GMC, BMW, Kia, Ford, and more. The list goes on. No need to drive around all day or spend hours on the internet. Come by today for a test drive and be amazed at the selection and the affordable prices. Affordable Used Cars, located on South Cushman.
KFAR weather.
Partly cloudy skies today with highs around 38. East winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Lows level off around 18. Tonight, cloudy. Chance for snow tomorrow. High of 40. Overcast skies. Upper 30s Wednesday with a chance for snow. Much cooler Thursday with highs in the upper 20s. Snow continues. And that's your weather.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM.
And streaming live at KFARradio.com.
All right, Fairbanks, welcome back to the final segment of the Problem Corner. It's Craig Campo filling in for David Peruse. I've got Jennifer Uhas here. And we've just been talking, if you're just joining us, we've been talking about a lot of stuff, but the National Park Service movement, HJR-10, you can go to the State of Alaska website and find HJR-10, which is the we're trying to push back on the Park Service's changing the rules back to eliminate
traditional hunting practices for bears.
Right, for bears. Well, and it also involves more than bears, right? I mean, we've got...
Well, that particular rule that they made affects... Well, it's baiting and denning, which I don't practice, but some people do.
But even caribou. I mean, the caribou swimming across the river, traditional methods that a lot of folks have been able to enjoy over the years.
But if they go to the Alaska Legislature Basis homepage, if you Google that, then you can find HJR-10.
Okay.
And then it'll have all the whereases in there that explain why the sponsor and the co-sponsors who've signed on. And this isn't just a Republican thing either.
Right.
It's been bipartisan. We've got a Democrat from Anchorage that's joining in with that and understands the hypocrisy behind it, which is amazing.
Right. Well, and people need to get involved with this. This is just another step in the federal overreach process that just keeps, you know. I always, whenever I think of this federal overreach and how desperate, how bad it's getting for Alaskans, I always picture the cartoon with the mongoose, the swamp goose that's swallowing the frog, and the frog is holding the neck of the goose so he can't eat him. And that's, the frog is us. The frog is, we are that frog. Alaskans are that frog. And we just got this big bureaucracy that's engulfing us. You know, with the AOC map, I always reminded you, we're down to 22% of the state we can access. 22%, the rest is mostly federal. You know, there's a native corporation, there's private land, there's everything else, but that is a shrinking number. And I know AOC has had a big push, like enough already, we have to stop this reduction in access, because every time you reduce a section of the state, it puts more pressure and more conflict on those areas you can hunt and fish and access, just because there's more people trying to utilize a smaller piece of real estate, and it's getting really bad. I mean, it's, again, I'm fortunate where I go, it hasn't got bad, but it's coming. I mean, there's no doubt people are going to find a way to get to these areas, and you always like to have a little breathing room in your hunting area, and we're losing that because we keep ignoring. I mean, not our group's pretty good, but the general public just doesn't pay attention to it. And if you don't get involved as a listener, just go to meetings or send in comments or just get involved, we're going to wake up one morning and we're going to be sitting in Fargo, North Dakota. We might as well be sitting in an area that part, like the most of the United States, where you just can't go do a lot of these things.
Yeah, we interviewed a gal a couple weeks ago, who single mom here in Fairbanks, always wanted to do the outdoor things and take the outdoor classes. By the way, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is currently looking for outdoor hunter safety ed instructors.
Oh, yeah.
You can go to the webpage under education. You can find the application there or just walk in and talk to some of the friendly folks at the info center here. Yep. But they are actively trying to recruit hunter safety ed instructors.
Good.
We have a caller?
Yeah, and we do have a caller. Well, we'll take that caller now. Welcome to Problem Corner. You're on the air. Your name is?
My name's Al.
Hey, Al. First-time caller?
First-time caller.
How you doing, Al?
Good. You know, I'm really a supporter of HJR-10. I think it's a really interesting document. You know, it asserts the state's rights to manage wildlife and throughout the whole entire state. Yet, you know, it seems like the Department of Fish and Game is unwilling to really accept that. On how they allocate resources when they're allocating, state wildlife resources to the Federal Subsistence Board.
Well, now, Al, you're on the Board of Game. Don't you allocate those wildlife resources?
Yeah, the Board of Game is in charge of allocation. They do because of times when harvestable surplus numbers come in. The board has given the department, jurisdiction to make those allocations. But my point is they're not conforming or allocating according to our state constitution, which was backed up by a Supreme Court ruling.
So what would you do as a Board of Game member? You said that the Board of Game delegated that to the department. What would you do to change this since it's Problem Corner and we solve problems?
So, that's a topic that's being discussed on how that potentially could work or get it back in the board's hands.
What kind of details would be needed to make that happen?
Well, one, because we're limited on resources financially, when harvestable surpluses start coming out, they usually come out in late summer, real early fall. That would mean, the board, if they were to allocate, they would have to, convene and have a meeting and allocate those resources.
One of the things that would solve at least contribute back to the financial constraints that the board has is that even when Anilka passed, it was expected that the federal program would be contributing financially to the state, and they dwindled that back. Eventually, they were only supporting they're supposed to be supporting the boards originally, if you look at that EIS record of decision. Back when I took over the Title VIII group that was the liaison team leader to the Federal Subsistence Board, the budget was $480 a year, and then they cut that back and penalized me for getting the RACs to vote with us. I don't think they give a dime.
They don't give anything.
We'd have to check. But, for the financial aspects, some of that is supposed to be coming from the federal program, and they aren't doing that. They want to choke the state board enough that they can't participate.
Yeah, it's a part of the agenda. Yeah.
Well, I'm much better at the management of game than I am the finances of managing game.
So as a board member, you're looking to change this and take
I'm
that away?
I'm just looking at all the options. I haven't, came out. I mean, there was a Board of Game meeting a couple weeks ago, and, I made mention of, the situation that's going on in Unit 13, where potentially, two-thirds of a harvest could be given to the federally rural qualified people, and that's only a select group of federally qualified people. So it's not all federally qualified people.
But how do they designate that?
The Federal Subsistence Board determines what communities or areas or road system areas are allowed to participate in a hunt. So they even make it smaller than all the federally qualified people are.
And often without the required consultation from the state. When
right.
I was there, the consultation comprised, here you go, here's what we decided.
Yes.
Not unlike this current National Park Service ruling, where the state had zero consultation, and they're mm-hmm. they're obligated to consult with the state, and that's one of the arguments I know. I watched Dan Sullivan's arguments, and that was one of the main ones: is you didn't even consult with us, and so they're trying mm-hmm. to make it mandatory. You have to consult with the state on a intense level, at least, not just oh, by the way, we're doing this, or usually in the 11th hour.
Other entities have cited meaningful consultation being necessary. So it's an opportunity, though, that we have Al here. What other issues for the listeners, Al, were hot at the Board of Game meeting that you just left?
Oh, Unit 19 Sheep was very controversial. Where what ended up happening was there was a proposal that was based on conservation to close the season for all uses that would include resident, non-resident, and subsistence for a total of 5 years. And through the deliberations on that, got amended and was only restricting non-resident opportunity to not be able to hunt for 5 years in 19C.
Was there any discussion of the interstate commerce aspects of that?
No, I don't believe there was. You can review the audio on that. But
what was your big takeaway from that proposal?
My big takeaway is, it got down to an emotional vote than being based on science and data.
Yeah, well, that's not uncommon in the sheep fight we're always having. I mean, that's the biology always seems to be second to emotion, whether it be resident, non-resident, pull curl, whatever. It just seems like there's always too much emotion in some of these decisions, and whatever happened to basing everything on science.
Now, so were you on the when you say that it passed for 5 years, right?
Yeah.
So nothing precludes that comes back into cycle in 3 years, correct?
It comes into cycle this year.
Okay.
Well, I mean, proposals for that area, Region 3, has a deadline of 1 May. So if somebody's upset or wants to change something in 19C or in any trapping or hunting regulation in Region 3.
So I know that you've spoken against board-generated proposals before. So since we have a seated member of the Alaska Board of Game here, this sounds like a call to the public who's listening to please spend some time before May 1st, get your proposals in, take a look and see what happened at this last Board of Game meeting, and maybe even call Al directly, email him, see how you could work together on something that might fix some of the things that happened at the last
meeting. There's issues for everything. I mean, it's not only sheep hunting, it's, moose hunting, moose antlerless reauthorizations, trapping regulations, season dates and changes. So there's quite a, the interior's area that's up for this cycle, so.
And May 1st is the deadline for those proposals.
May 1st is the deadline for proposals to be accepted for the March meeting for this area.
I'd also like to encourage people to join their local ACs, get involved that way. We've talked about that before. It'd be nice if you almost had to be a member of an AC to be able to put some of these proposals in, because some of them are just, no BS, just a waste of everybody's time. There are some that are just ridiculous. I mean, everybody wants their proposals heard, but people don't think it through sometimes. They just...
It's always good. Sometimes you can have a great idea, you just don't know how to get it, through the formatting. And, there's many, the AC could help you out as a whole. They could accept it and put their name on it. Or there's many individuals, and including myself, that, help the public...
It's a great place to learn things, and it's easier and easier to participate. One thing about the interior is we're pretty spread out. People can't always come to town for that. But if you've got basic internet connection now or phone service, you can dial in and listen. They didn't always used to do that. So now you can do the Zoom thing, or you can be on your phone and you can learn what the issues are. You can tell someone on your local advisory committee your idea. They can help get that into the Board of Game. But yeah, okay, so May 1st is the deadline. Go to the department page for boards, and then you can find the link to submit your proposal there.
Yep.
Al, I want to thank you for your efforts on the board, too. You're the hardest working Board of Game member I think we've ever had. We're going to wrap the show up, so thanks for the call.
All right,
Al.
Have a great.
Yep, and that's another episode of Problem Corner. I want to thank my guest, Jennifer Uhas, for showing up and having a lot of important stuff going on right now. We encourage you all to get involved. And we'll see you, or Dave will see you probably on the next Problem Corner. I guess that would maybe be tomorrow. All right, thanks, Fairbanks. Talk to you later.
This is your talk station.
There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. Enough is enough with this guy.
660 AM, KFAR, Fairbanks.